Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Tech Doctor podcast. It's a real pleasure to be back with you again tonight, and I'm excited because I'm doing something I haven't done before. I'm talking with a man from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who has just started a brand new podcast that I was very excited about and intrigued by, and he'll tell us all about what he does in that podcast in a few minutes, but I want to introduce to the Tech Doctor audience Mr. Corey Ballard. And Corey, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. It's a pleasure to have you, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much for having me on this evening. I sure do appreciate it. Like you mentioned, I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Currently, I am working at a nonprofit organization serving the blind and visually impaired. We're kind of a one-of-a-kind organization in the southeastern part of this state, and we have a whole full spectrum of different programs and services, and I get to have the lucky job of managing what we call our Outlook shop. It's basically a retail store where we sell products designed for people who are blind and visually impaired. So I manage the store. I get to decide on all the cool new gadgets we get in the store. I get to play with them, which is great. Really makes my wife happy because now I don't have to buy most of the things. I get to play with them for free. And if I really like something, I can go ahead and purchase it. So I've been working in this field for about 5.5 years, and then I also am interested in technology, especially surrounding cell phones, and do a lot of presentations around the Midwest here on accessible cell phones, what the options are. I found that there was a number of companies doing things like that, but they were really only talking about the products that they sell, which, I understand that if it's your business. But my presentations, what I usually bring to the table is more of a unbiased view of what's out there and, what could be the best for somebody.
That's a really great thing that you're doing, Corey. 30 years ago, I did a doctoral dissertation on how rehabilitation professionals go about making decisions about selecting technology for their clients. And there was a real need back then, and I'm sure there's a real need now for people like you, especially someone who can come along and offer multiple choices and not be wedded to one or two because you those happen to be the ones you sell. So sounds like a really great thing you're doing out there in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's really one of the models that we follow at our nonprofit, is that we don't recommend one thing over another, which to be honest is very difficult. Our computer instructor, he is a WindowEyes user, and so he's obviously more comfortable with WindowEyes and tends to lean towards that. I'm a JAWS user myself. So when I'm talking with somebody, I'm most familiar with JAWS, and so you tend to lean towards that. So it's difficult, but also very important to try to stay above all of that and really present the options, because everybody's different.
In your shop where you work there, do anything with the Macs or the iPhones or the Apple products?
Recently we have gotten into a little bit of the iPad and the iPhone, mostly because I have both of them. I was talking with somebody recently, and I didn't want to say that the iPod or the iPhone and the iPad were revolutionary, but they really kind of are for an assistive technology device. I mean, to be able to walk into the store with your sighted buddy, buy the exact same device, walk out using it together without purchasing another, third-party screen reader or screen magnifier, really is, I think those products are really the first that have really brought that to the table. So we are staying on top of that. Our lab is the majority of our lab is Windows. We do have one iMac in there. And then I have my iPhone and iPad that we use then too. So what we've really noticed is, so far, the demand and for them have been low, and mostly that's because the majority of clients that we serve aren't up to that level yet. They're coming in you know, in their late 40s, late 60s, never have really used a computer before, have just lost their vision to maybe macular degeneration, something like that. So using the iPhone, using the iPad, or just using a computer in general isn't exactly high on their to-do list. They want to get there, but they need to start with basic keyboarding. So, you know, that's kind of more of the people we're serving, although we're aware and stay on top of, you know, what things are, what options are out there. And you know, the more we play with the iPad and the iMac, we really start to realize that it can be a viable option for someone.
I agree with you, and I think that that's starting to change, really. Windows, for so very long, was the operating system of choice for people who are blind or visually impaired. But I did a presentation for the American Council of the Blind, the BITS group, this summer at the ACB convention in Phoenix, and my topic was Apple accessibility. And I was very pleased that people were quite receptive to the idea of taking a look at the iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch, and of course the Mac itself. And people had some really good questions about, can you actually do this or that on the Mac with VoiceOver? And I was pleased that I was able to really answer yes to almost all of them. And so I think it's something that's come on in a big hurry, relatively speaking, over the last 4 or 5 years, and we're going to see a lot more people. I hope you're going to start seeing more people walk into your shop saying, yeah, I want to learn a computer, and I eventually want to get up to the point of having my own, and I wanted to start out with that iMac. I'm hoping you're going to see more of that.
Yeah, and we're thinking too that, you know, you look at the iPad and there is such simplicity. There is no file system to learn. There is no the ribbons or menu bars now. It's quite simple, especially for a low vision user. My wife has sighted, and she had some cruddy Nokia phone that every day she would yell at. She couldn't stand it. Finally talked her into getting an iPhone. She didn't want to do it. She said, oh, it's too expensive, and, you know, it's only for nerds, and I don't want to do it. And I finally talked her into it, and now I can't get her off of her phone. I'm getting, you know, every month I'm getting emails from AT&T saying she's getting close to her data cap, and she absolutely loves it because it makes sense to her. She touches what she wants to do. It's not a hit your, you know, right soft key down arrow 10 times. It's just tap the screen, touch the thing that you want to do. It makes sense. And I think for beginning computer users, again, that touch interface. And I think that's the biggest, for people who are kind of leery of it, it's that touch screen, the idea of using a touch screen. And, you know, I'll be honest, when I first heard about it too, I thought, how is that even possible?
Absolutely. And I told my father one time that there's no way I would ever have an iPhone because I would never be able to use it. And that's something I'm so happy that turned out to be a lie.
I used to listen, I still do, but I listened to MacBreak Weekly on the Twit Network even before the iPhone was accessible. And I just remember hearing about these apps and thinking, man, you know, this is one thing that I really wish I could have access to. And then I would think, though, on the other hand, you know what? It's touchscreen. How could you possibly? Maybe you could use it, but could you really use it effectively? You know, I just can't imagine. And again, like you said, man, was I wrong on that. It can. But there is a big learning. I think there's a pretty big learning curve. It's not a device that you can really just pick up and immediately start using and think it's simple as pie. I think it does take some practice to get those gestures down. I was working with somebody a couple of days ago with the iPad, and you know, he was having just a really hard time with the gestures. And part of the issue is he was just banging on it, you know,
right.
But it basically was whacking it across the room with these double taps. And so I had to take his hand and pretend his hand was the iPad and just show, no, this is just very light like this. It's a very sensitive. And you realize once you get those gestures down, how much easier and more efficient you can be on them. So it does take practice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was pleased, honestly, when I started with the iPhone that it didn't seem like it took me but a couple days really to get comfortable with it. And I was afraid it would take weeks or months. And so, but I do think that you're right. You know, blind people, none of us are accustomed to doing gestures on a piece of glass. You know, we're accustomed to having more tactile feedback than that on our devices. And so, of course, it takes some getting used to, but I honestly think you're right. The main thing is just getting accustomed to doing those gestures, learning to do them softly and you know, smoothly. And once you get that down, you've really got something that is a very consistent, very fluid interface throughout the entire operating system. So once you learn a little bit, you've accomplished a lot.
Yep, I agree with you absolutely.
Well, how in the world did you get from the place of recommending different devices and doing the job that you do to starting a podcast on teaching us about different apps for the iOS devices? Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Like I mentioned, I've always been interested in technology, and I had a previous endeavor. It was Access for Us, doing some more blog, more text-based reviews of assistive technology, and I did a little segment where I was spending a week with all the digital talking book players and writing reviews, and I enjoyed doing that, but I found two things. One, it's a lot of work to sit and try to write out extensive reviews, actually typing them out. And two, you start to run out of devices. Not that there isn't a million devices out there, but when you're talking $2,000, $2,500 bucks a pop for these devices, you start to run out of things to review quite quickly.
Absolutely.
And so that site, it's still live, and I still kind of work on a couple of reviews here and there, but I started to realize that it was becoming more work rather than really enjoying it as much. And I've been using cell phones for many, many years now. Like I said, I started with the old 3600 and moved up, and I've used MobileSpeak and Talks and MobileSpeak for smartphone, and I've always enjoyed having an accessible cell phone. It's always been very important to me, and I've always really enjoyed that. And when the iPhone came out, you know, I jumped on it and got one rather quickly and started playing with it and getting different apps. And, you know, when you're looking at, an app store with whatever their 330,000 that they're at or whatever it is now, and you're looking at, 99 cents to $1.99, trying out all of these different ones becomes quite accessible and quite easy to do. You know, me personally, I have no problem spending, even $1.99 on an app as risking it. You know, and if I find out it's, not accessible with VoiceOver, I'm bummed, but I don't go through the trouble of asking for a refund for $2. My belief is, yes, all apps should be accessible with VoiceOver. In a perfect world, that would be great. But let's be honest. It's not going to be like that. And so my belief is if you risk buying an application, not knowing, if you haven't talked with anybody else, if you are not on email lists asking, so if you make that risk and you plunge into it and it's not accessible, well, you know what? You learned your lesson in that, So for me personally, I don't ask for refunds. I figure it's my responsibility. I purchased it without doing my homework. But having such a wide range of opportunities made it very easy to start filling your home screens up quite quickly. And, I'll be on the email list for the iPhone and, seeing a lot of people asking, hey, does this work with VoiceOver? Is this accessible? And started realizing that there was a opportunity to do, audio tours of these apps. So, I think most, I would say most people who are blind and visually impaired are audio learners.
Yes.
And so we can read a review and we can read an email about somebody saying, double tap this, swipe three times. But actually hearing somebody do it makes life a lot easier, because I know for myself, sometimes when you're writing things down, you might not get the exact right button. Maybe it's not called settings button, it's options button, but you wrote down settings. And so you have somebody who's looking all over for that screen for settings. They see options, but they're like, no, they said, right, you know, to look for settings. And so actually having an audio tour of people using, you know, of someone using these apps, I thought would be a great opportunity. And I enjoy doing things like this too. I'm the type of guy that always needs to have some type of hobby. If I'm not working on something, then I kind of get bored and just get restless. So I'm always looking for projects to do. And to me, this seemed like a great thing. I've never done a podcast before, have never worked with a mixer or microphone. So I said, I'm going to dive into this and see what we can do. And that's kind of how it evolved. And although in my job and in my, you know, professional public speaking events, I still keep it very open and present the different options out there. But I'll tell you, 99% of cell phone related presentations I do, the iPhone comes up pretty quickly in the presentation. And I find that the majority of the presentations, the last 25 minutes, which is, you know, left for all questions, really end up being all about the iPhone, because inevitably they always ask, well, what phone do you use? And I say, this is what I use and this is why I use it. And then it becomes a big, long conversation on why do you love it? What apps do you like? Oh, I've got that app too. Did you hear about this app? And I was at a conference back in October last month in Madison, Wisconsin. And I was doing a presentation. At the end, somebody came up and we were talking, and it ended up being the developer of List Recorder. So from Six Mode.
Yeah.
I said, it's great to meet you. And we started chatting, and I was telling her how I love the app, and it actually got into a folder on my dock. And so we just kind of, you know, chatted about it, but it's kind of a small world like that. And that's, you know, I had about 40 some people in the presentation, and it was an hour long. And again, the last 20 minutes were, you know, was talking all about the iPhone, and my wife was there, and she was walking around with her iPhone, turning on VoiceOver to show people. And so it just inevitably seems to go that way. And I don't know if it's Apple's terrific PR and marketing or what it is, but they've got serious buzz behind them. And, you know, right now it's the hot item, and I've got one here and have a lot of apps and enjoy doing it. And it's very, to be honest, it's quite simple to do. I try to keep it, you know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes or less. I know that when I listen to podcasts, you know, if it's something instructional about, an app review, I want it quick. I want to hear what it does and get out. Now, if it's, you know, more of people having a good conversation, then I'm in it for the long haul. But for those type, I want it short and sweet, and want to hear if I like it or not.
Okay, so for people who haven't listened to your podcast yet, it seemed to me like you got off to a very fast start. If I'm not mistaken, you've already produced about 8 issues, something like that. And what the way it works is as you described, it is a fairly short, usually 10 or 15 minute review where you actually sit down with your iPhone, it sounds like plugged in to your mixer, and with a microphone, obviously, and you talk your way through a particular app while you actually demonstrate voiceover working with that app. Is that's what I've experienced when I listen to your podcast. Is that pretty much how it works, or pretty much what you try to do with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's all with my iPhone, bringing you audio tours of apps for your iOS devices. So I'd say in the description, it's join Corey and VoiceOver for audio tours. And so it's myself and VoiceOver as we go through the different apps. And usually what I do is, if it's an app that I use on a day-to-day basis, then you know, a lot of times what I'll do is delete it and reinstall it just so we can start out from fresh. So if there's any settings, you know, all the settings are going to be at default and we can kind of chat about it and see what they do. Or if it's an app I've never used before, then I'll download it, use it for a while, and then again, delete it to start out fresh.
So how in the world do you make decisions with 300,000 of them about which apps to review on your podcast? How do you pick them?
Well, so far, you know, like you said, I've done 8 episodes so far. And the reason it kind of, you know, anytime you start out new, you really jump into it. And what my goal is to probably do anywhere from 1 to 2 episodes a week. That's going to be my plan as we kind of plateau and get into a little bit of a routine here. In the beginning, I kind of jumped out of the gate and was shooting a few out there at a time. I wanted people to get an idea of what it was and get people interested. And I was enjoying doing it. But like I said, with life, and I have a 12-month-old little girl, and I've got another little boy coming in February. So we're probably going to be looking at maybe 1 episode to 2 episodes a week. But the way I've been kind of picking them lately was just apps that I really enjoy using. And, you know, I've been trying to pick a little bit of a variety of things. You know, I have probably 5 or 6 different music players on the phone, but I didn't want to do, you know, 5 music players in a row. That's going to get pretty boring. I'm kind of picking and choosing and bouncing back and forth. Also on the website, there is a request form. So the point of the podcast is to bring people information. And so what I want is I want people to tell me what they want to hear an audio tour of. You know, so you can request it on the website and then on Twitter too. Feel free to send requests. But that's really the main goal is, you know, what do people want to hear an audio tour of? You know, and the only thing I ask is just be somewhat considerate. Don't hit me with a lot of $100 apps. And
right.
It's going to get pretty upset if I'm, you know, if I'm getting a couple $100 iTunes bills. But
of course. Well, you know, one of the things that I've been quite impressed by, in addition to just the style of your show and to the quality of the content, is your website. And as someone who has put together a website in the last year for the Tech Doctor podcast, and actually my site is a very basic, generic WordPress site. I've not put a lot of time into really developing it. But it looks like, you know, your page is just right up there and running with request forms and contact information and a place to email. And I mean, it's just all the episodes are there clearly. It's all clearly laid out. So it seems to me like you have really hit the ground running with this thing.
And that's the beauty of WordPress, though, right there. And I haven't had any background in web development or anything. It was just, again, probably a few years ago, I got interested in web development. It was a hobby. Again, I needed something to learn, and it kind of grew from there. And then my work needed a new website. And so I did our very first website, just coding it by hand, and then kind of moved to WordPress. And to be honest, WordPress makes creating a site very easy with so many different plugins. You can have a contact form right off the bat. And I use PowerPress plugin for the podcast. And although the player itself is not accessible, so I don't use that, but you know, putting it on each post and having your RSS and iTunes feed is very simple. So I can't take much credit for the site. That's really WordPress and making it quite easy to do.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way with mine. I use PowerPress as well. I guess a lot of us do who have podcasts on a WordPress site. So I'm really interested also in, you've certainly reviewed some of my very favorite apps up to this point. You reviewed Dropbox, and you reviewed Elements that works with Dropbox. And so, you know, you're picking some of the ones that I really enjoy using. What are a few others that you have done so people can have some idea of what's up there?
We also did Text Expander, and that worked with Elements. And that's a way to type long messages by just using little snippets. The example I give is if you would type D-D-A-T-E, it would actually replace that text with today's date. And so it's a really quick and easy way. And you can set custom snippets up. And then there's a number of apps that support those snippets, those text expander snippets, and Elements was one of them. So we've done that. We've also done, I've done Pogo Plug. That was a recent one. And that was a little bit different because that does require some hardware on your home network. But it basically allows you, it's similar to Dropbox in the fact that it gives you access to your files. It's different in the fact that it's there's four USB ports, and so you plug your external USB drives, hard drives, into that Pogo Plug. So unlike Dropbox, where, you know, if you have a free account, it's 2 gigabytes, this one there's no limit to basically whatever hard drives you have. So Pogo Plug we've done. We did 0.977 Music Player, which is a very big online streaming music, and they have a great app that's very accessible, great quality, and it gives you 8 or 10 different genres of music, anything from the hits to country to jazz, comedy. We did Podcaster. That was kind of a bigger one because Podcaster really has a lot of features, and that's basically a full-fledged podcast manager for your iPhone. You can subscribe to podcasts, delete them, listen to them, stream them, basically really taking out iTunes. There's no reason to subscribe in iTunes and then plug your phone in and then sync. You can do it all right with Podcaster.
Yeah, that is really intriguing to me. And I use Podcaster, and I also use iTunes. Actually, right now, iTunes is my primary resource for podcasts just because everything is set up there. But after listening to your explanation of Podcaster, and I've had it for a while, I actually sort of had it and deleted it and downloaded a newer version and deleted it and then went back and got the current version because they keep making it better and better. And so it's one of those apps that's kind of hard to ignore after a while. And so I was intrigued with your explanation of how you can take an OPML file and email it to yourself and load it into Podcaster. And so I gave that a try. And so I just pulled all my feeds from iTunes into Podcaster in one fell swoop there. And now I've got them all there, and I don't have any of them downloading automatically. I don't want to fill up my phone with podcasts that I've already getting from iTunes anyway. But if I'm traveling or something and not at my Mac to sync, or don't feel like syncing, like you said, it's a perfect solution if you don't have anything but just a 3G connection or a Wi-Fi connection without a computer around. You can still get your podcast, so it's really a nice app for that.
And it is, and you don't have to download it. That's what's great too, is you can just stream it. So if you don't feel like downloading the episode, you can just click play, you know, double tap play, and start streaming it without having to download it. And you know, the OPML file, that was great. And I, to be honest, I'm looking at, you know, the import, and it's telling me that I can, you know, type in the RSS feed or a URL to the OPML file. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's awesome, but what happens if you don't have your own, you know, hosting, you don't have your own website? How are you going to get that OPML file in there? And I was thinking to myself, and I said, I'm going to try emailing it. You know, maybe this is going to work. And, you know, it at first I didn't think it was going to work because it was showing me the OPML file inside the mail viewer. And then I realized there was that open in button, and then boom, it just worked. And you're right. You know, I think that's one thing that people may not want to use podcasters because they don't feel like going through and resubscribing to 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 podcasts, all doing that all again. It's kind of annoying. So being able to do that OPML file trick was kind of nice.
Oh yeah. Pulled them all over there. And you know, very quickly, and I don't know, I've got maybe 30 feeds that I subscribe to, that I listen to on a regular basis. And those are the ones that I transferred over. But yeah, that's what I do, is I don't usually download them. I just stream them. And so they don't end up on my phone. And it's a very nice, either a standalone, you don't even need iTunes if you don't want to use it, or if you do use iTunes or something else, it's a very nice addition to that. So at any rate, you know, it's my real point, the bigger point here, I guess, is that I'm very excited about the fact that you are taking these apps and giving people a tour of them and showing us things that maybe even if we already have the app, which it turns out that most of the ones that you have done so far, I have had for a while, but with most of them, I've also learned something from what you did. So that's really exciting when that can happen. And I really am glad to see you stepping up and doing that. You know, we need... There's plenty of room here in this arena because there's so much to talk about and so much to learn. We can all take a little piece of it, and it's good for everybody. So good for you for doing that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And like I said, I'm having a lot of fun doing it. And there's so many people out there that know so much more about the iPhone and iOS than I do. But I was realizing that nobody was really coming out in saying things. You know, on email lists, like I mentioned, there's a lot of great people helping on email. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to create a podcast and do stuff because, you know, it's not for everybody. You may not want to, talk into a microphone. And I realized, I listened to the first couple back to make sure it sounded okay. And I realized quite quickly I did not want to hear my own voice and now don't listen to them anymore. but everybody learns a different way, and some people may prefer, you know, the VI phone list or something like that. They may prefer that email list, getting help that way. Some people may prefer doing things on their own and just learning, and then others may enjoy listening to somebody else give a tour with the same device they're using with voiceover, and that's who I was aiming for. And, again, like you mentioned, even if you you see an episode and you say, I already have that app or I downloaded that and didn't like it, give the episode a shot, because I've gotten a couple of people who have said, wow, I've had that app and never really used it and didn't realize it could do that. That's cool. I'm going to start doing it. And I've done the same. I've one of the greatest things that Apple has done, besides putting VoiceOver and Zoom on the phone, was allowing you to re-download your app after you delete it. Because I can't count how many times I've deleted an app because I thought it was stupid or I wouldn't use it, and then 2 months later went back to it to try out. And like you mentioned, Podcaster was the same thing for me. I think I've had it on this phone 3 or 4 times already, and now finally it's stuck. And so that was awesome. It saved me a lot of money. And there's already been times where I go to get an app and it tells me I already have it. You know, I can't install it. But I just enjoy, doing these audio tours. I like to see that people are listening and enjoying it. My plan is to keep bringing as many tours as I can of as many different apps as I can. Like I mentioned, what I really want to do is bring the apps that you guys want to hear tours of. So, you know, go to allwithmyiphone.com, follow All With My iPhone on Twitter, and you tell me what tours you want to hear, and I'll be happy to produce those.
So that site is allwithmyiphone.com, and the Twitter feed is the same, All With My iPhone. And I do encourage everyone to give this podcast a shot. You just really might like it. Corey, I think it takes some skill to do what you do. It's a little bit tricky to not talk at the same time voiceovers talking, and a little bit tricky to know how much additional information to give besides what voiceover is speaking and things like that. And it seems like you've got it down to even in these early shows where that flows pretty smoothly. Has that been much of a challenge to develop the skill to do that?
Yes. It does take a little bit of practice because we're all used to, talking over each other. And, you even want to talk over, voiceover when it's speaking. And what I tend to do is, I'll try to stop voiceover if I have something important I want to say. And, you know, you learn as you go on, you know, when you're swiping, if you're flicking to the right and you're looking at a whole page of different options, you don't need to repeat every single option, because in the beginning shows I was doing that and I was realizing, man, this is really annoying hearing myself repeat every single thing voiceover is repeating. That really defeats the purpose. So I just kind of play it by ear. And if there's a button or an option that just you sort of maybe get what it does and maybe it doesn't, then I'll take the time to explain what it is. So basically, if the first time I heard that, I didn't know what it did exactly, then I feel like that's something I should, you know, kind of talk about.
Right. Well, you know, I think that really, in a lot of ways, it's great for people to have the chance to hear voiceover saying some of those options and reading out those buttons, because that's some real-time learning. In addition to learning something about voiceover, they're learning to understand voiceover. And, you know, sometimes people will, I think I've hear them complain a little bit when I've done different demonstrations. Well, I couldn't understand your speech synthesizer, or I wish you would have sped it up or slowed it down or used a different voice or this or that. And I do understand certainly how we all have our preferences and everything. But at the same time, it's really nice when you can sort of accidentally on purpose learn to understand a new synthesizer as you're learning a new app or a new skill. So I think it's great the way you're going about that.
It's very funny. My wife and I have been together for about 5 years. And in the beginning, she had no idea what my speech was saying. If it was eloquence on the computer, or if it was eloquence with talks, or whatever it might have been in the iPhone, she had no idea what it was saying. Now, 5 years later, she now can understand it just perfectly. And I run my iPhone at about 65% speech rate, and you know, JAWS is somewhat similar to that. So it's not ridiculously fast whatsoever, but it's a decent clip. But you know, 5 years of a completely sighted person just hearing it secondhand, she's now picked it up and can understand it just fine. You're right.
No more secrets, huh? You can't exactly. Count on writing those secret messages anymore, because won't be long before the kids will understand it all too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and I found, I to be completely honest, I cannot count in the 8 episodes that I've done so far, I cannot count how many times I had to restart the podcast because I forgot to change the speech rate.
Yeah.
Not everybody wants it at 65%.
Right.
And I know that there's probably people who think my, you know, I usually bring it down to about 25 and 30%, when I do the podcast. And I know people, there's probably people who complain that it's still too fast, and there's people that think it's too slow. But I thought it was kind of right in the middle there. But I can't count how many times I've been halfway through the show and realize, oh, I didn't change the speech rate, so I got to start all over again. And but that's important. If the speech is too fast, I'd rather it be too slow than too fast. Because if it's too fast, you're gonna lose a lot of people who can't understand it and they give up. If it's too slow, even the people who, you know, are used to 80%, they can still listen to it. They understand it. Yes, it might frustrate them that it's running a little slow, but they can still understand it just fine. So I'd rather it be a little slow than a little fast. So, but, you know, and those are things you learn as you do the show. And, you know, I know that if I'm lucky to make it to, you know, episode 100, I'll probably have to do episode 100 two or three times because I keep forgetting to change the speech rate. So,
oh, isn't that the truth? And that's just how it is with podcasting. There are always those things that have to be done over a couple of times. I've certainly done my share of that. Most of us know how to speed up podcasts anyway. So if we want it faster, we can probably figure out a way to do that. And I think they've been very understandable so far. Apple has had a pretty big week this week with the new announcement and release of iOS 4.2.1, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've certainly enjoyed some of the new features and some new things about it. And I wondered if you've had a chance to play with it at all yet, or if you have any thoughts or comments about it.
I updated both my iPhone and iPad. Well, iPhone yesterday, iPad this morning. I've been enjoying the there hasn't been a whole lot of changes. I mean, I shouldn't say that. There's a decent amount of changes. In your rotor, you can now have your speech rate, which is great. You don't have to go into settings and, you know, general accessibility, voiceover. You know, you've got it right there. You can change it on the fly. And that's a benefit because, you know, if you're reading an email, you might have it on one speech rate. But if you're reading a book in iBooks or something, you might want to slow it down or speed it up. So having quick access to the speech rate is great. You know, I don't. And I haven't played with it yet, but I don't exactly understand under the sounds the volume keys. I know that if you can have it so that it only does voiceover volume, or you can leave it the default, what, you know, the way it's been, where, you know, if you're turning it up or down, it's doing the system sounds, and the way to turn up voiceover volume is to have it speaking and do it. So I guess I'm a little confused. I mean, I think I get it, but my opinion is, so if you're listening to something and you have the speech or the volume keys only doing voiceover, I guess the only way then to turn up your, if you're listening to the iPod, would be using the volume, the actual software volume then, I guess, is the only way you can do it. Which,
well, actually, I played with that some today. And actually, what seems to be happening is that the when you turn that switch off under sounds, what you're doing is telling it not to mess essentially with the ringer volume or the system sounds volume. Leave those set to whatever you have them set to, so that but when you actually use the volume buttons, that will affect both voiceover and whatever you're listening to. So your podcast or whatever you're listening to will still be increased in volume when you press the volume up button. But what won't change is your system sounds and your ringer volumes.
Now that's different. Now I'm excited because I can't count how many times I've, you know, barely heard my ringer because I was turning voiceover down, and next thing I knew it was turning my ringer volume.
Right.
So that's a good feature. I'm happy to see that too. I said something on Twitter that I was, you know, it was just a little thing, but it was kind of cool. You know, now on the keyboard, and maybe I've missed this in previous releases, but now on the keyboard, the software keyboard pops up, there's a little noise, and when it goes away, there's a little noise. And maybe that was prior to 4.2.1, but I don't ever remember hearing it.
No, I think that's new.
So that's nice. One thing that it was doing that I really enjoyed, I had my key echo to words, and it used to do, when you did space, it would repeat space, and then it would say the word. Yesterday when I was typing, when I did space, it would not repeat space. It would just say the word. And I thought that was great. It told me what I wanted to hear quicker. Again, it's something little, but I enjoyed it. But now for some reason today, it's saying space again. So I didn't change anything. So why back? I don't know.
You had a favorite feature for one day.
Yeah. And maybe it was a bug that it wasn't saying it. Maybe it's supposed to say it still. But, you know, I think voiceover has been a little bit snappier. And I've seen, you know, some improvements with just overall performance with voiceover, which is always good. I did have people mentioned it on an email list today. I did encounter a little bug with, the messages where the blank message field, if I wanted to reply, disappeared. The last option that I had on that screen, if I was swiping to the right, was the last, SMS message that came in. And so that was kind of a weird bug. And I know people were talking about that today. And there, I guess, are some specific steps to recreate it. But all in all, I've been happy with 4.2. I've really been happy on the iPad. I think 4.2.1 is although a great update for the iPhone, it's nowhere near as big of an update as it is for the iPad. And, you know, iPad, finally, you've got everything you've got on your iPhone now. You've got your app switcher, you've got your folders, you've got your threaded messages in your inbox. One of the things I've always hated about bouncing back and forth between the two is that it was like I was really using two different operating systems, and I was. But it was, you know, I'd go to the email and it wasn't threaded messages, and I was, oh, that's annoying. Or you go and you don't have background music, or you can't make folders on the iPad. So it was kind of annoying. So being able to do all that finally on the iPad really makes the experience a lot different, and I'm starting to enjoy using it more. So
it's so funny to me, you know, that it really is a situation where, for a little while, the iPad was the shiny new thing and it was way ahead. But then all of a sudden, the iPhone came out and jumped ahead of it in terms of features, and everybody's had to wait for several months for the iPad to catch back up again. So hopefully Apple will keep them more in sync from here on out, and the feature sets will be updated, you know, at the same time. Well, I'm really excited about some things about iOS 4. I'm excited about Apple TV becoming accessible.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's a very cool thing. And actually, my favorite Braille device is the HIMS, the Braille Sense On Hand, which I have, and the Braille Sense Plus, the 32-cell unit, are now operating with the iPhone. You can use the Braille display with the iPhone with those devices, and I'm really excited about that. It's fun to have Braille access, for me at least, have Braille access on the iPhone now. And so a lot of exciting things to play with over the Thanksgiving holidays.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, again, the Braille, I'm not a Braille user myself. But again, you know, that's something that Apple, you know, a lot of people have said it, and I've said it from day one too, is Apple didn't need to add VoiceOver or Zoom to their iOS devices. Let's be completely honest. They're not getting the market of people that are buying it specifically for VoiceOver is nothing to Apple. I mean, it's not like we're making a huge sway in their bottom line. So they didn't have to do it. They chose to do it. And the same with Braille display. They could have just stopped with VoiceOver and Zoom and been done, but they added, you know, Braille display support. I think it's something to applaud them for. It's really is showing that they are taking the initiative and taking accessibility and, you know, taking it seriously. And, you know, I know a lot of people do say, you know, that they don't like that Apple's a closed system, and, you know, Apple giveth and they can taketh away. You know, iPhone 5 could have no VoiceOver and not be accessible at all. And, you know, if that happens, I'll be very bummed. But I definitely wouldn't regret the 2 years that I was able to use the 3GS and iPhone 4. So, you know, I right now I have no problem putting all my eggs in an Apple basket at this point. So if like I said, if it becomes something that's not accessible in the future, well, then we'll all move on to the next shiny toy that is. So
yeah, and I'm confident that that Apple will remain committed to the accessibility front. They have made a pretty strong statement in that direction, and I actually played some clips this summer where Steve Jobs, in a couple keynote presentations, talked a good bit about accessibility and demoed VoiceOver at one point. So I'm hopeful that they will remain committed to it. I hope it will just become a part of their product line that they won't even think twice about, you know, and it seems like it's headed in that direction, but we'll see. I mean, I agree with you. We never know what's going to happen next, and we all have to just hang in there and use what's available to us. But it is a very exciting time, and it's so much fun to see Apple innovate and see us as people who are blind be able to take advantage of those innovations just about the moment they become available.
Yeah, we're standing right in line. You know, the Apple TV that was released, what? I don't remember when the keynote was. It was a couple months ago?
Yeah.
And, you know, the first version that came out, it wasn't accessible. But, you know, you're talking in a month and a half, 2 months' time, they release an update that gives, you know, voiceover support. So, and I think most people, I think we all kind of assumed it would come. Same thing with, you know, I believe in a not so distant update, you're going to be able to run iOS apps on it. You know, there's already a post where people, you know, they have showed you can install iOS apps on your Apple TV. There's no way to launch them at this point, but it does prove that, you know, and why wouldn't Apple allow you to have your Facebook app or a weather app right on your big screen TV, right in your living room? It just makes sense. And once that happens, you know, you're gonna have access to just as much as you do on your iPhone, but right in your living room. And it, you know, I love the Apple TV. I'd love to get one, but at this point, I just can't, without it doing, you know, live TV, I just can't justify doing it. And for me, the reason I'm a media center user, so, you know, I have a computer in the living room that runs our entertainment center, and so I get you know, accessible DVR and access to Netflix and everything right there.
Sure.
So I really don't need it, but I also have a big, huge computer sitting in there too.
Right. So. And for me, I don't really have any accessible media set up in the living room. I have a sighted wife and a sighted son, and they do most of the TV watching around here. But for me, for $99, yeah, I'll buy an Apple TV and have access to Netflix and iTunes content. Sure, that'll be a cool thing to be able to get to with VoiceOver. So I'm sure I'll do it. I've already told my wife I'm probably going to give myself an Apple TV for Christmas. So
yeah.
I probably will. But yeah, it is a very exciting time, and I'm just really happy that you're adding to that excitement with your podcast and with giving us information about these apps. So I think you've come along with this at a really great time. And we've been going for a while here, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So really, I just want to thank you for your willingness to take an hour and come on the Tech Doctor podcast. If you don't mind, remind people one more time of your contact information and your site so people can know where to go.
Sure. First off, thank you very much for having me. I sure do appreciate it. You know, I had a great time chatting with you, and I think you're doing a great show, and I appreciate it. But the website, again, is allwithmyiphone.com. The Twitter, you can follow me on the Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at allwithmyiphone. And then also feel free to email me at Corey, that's C-O-R-Y, at allwithmyiphone.com. And like I mentioned before, please send me your requests on apps you want to hear. I don't want to bore people with apps that I think are great. So send me the ones that you want to hear tours of.
Yeah, terrific. And you heard it here, folks. Corey said he's willing to buy all those apps and try them out for you. So don't hesitate to take him up on it. Let's just see how many we can get him to install here. And if you want to talk to me or have questions or comments about the Tech Doctor podcast, feel free to email me at techdoctor123@gmail.com. That's techdoctor123@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening, and we sure enjoy bringing this to you. And so long, Corey. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.